Thank you so much for speaking with me today about your State of the Field article, which is called Conceptualizing Epistemic Violence, an Interdisciplinary Assemblage for IR. To start, what do you see as the main contribution of your piece?
Thank you for inviting me to contribute to the podcast, first of all. What I wanted to do with my piece or with the work that is behind this article is to contribute to a very vivid and already existing discussion about undoing IR, about challenging IR as it is, and about asking what entanglements there are between our modes of knowledge production, our habitus of knowledge production, our products that come out of that on the one hand, and on different forms of violence on the other hand, forms of violence that we claim to analyze, to understand, or maybe to contribute to overcome with our disciplines within and along IR, which is political theory, international relations themselves, peace studies, where I come from mainly, or international development or others. So the problem that I identified is that to many very critical IR scholars, postcolonial, decolonial, or feminists, the term is very common. They use it in a very natural way, epistemic violence, without further explaining maybe what they mean by it. And on the other hand, I conceive of a mainstream of IR and other disciplines which never speak of epistemic violence at all, who have a very narrow understanding of violence. And this is my main point, I think, that I want to contribute to a debate that widens our understanding of violence. There are concepts like structural, cultural, normative, symbolic, and other violence, which are already better known in the social sciences, but epistemic violence is not at all. So what I wanted to bring together is, on the one hand, this epistemological reflection and critique of feminist post and decolonial scholars, on the one hand, and an already existing field of debate of broad forms of violence on the other. So this is what I wanted to do with the discussion or debate about epistemic violence. And I wanted to offer a few different paths towards what we can understand by it, different traditions of knowledge, how we can conceive of epistemic violence. As I said, IR and related disciplines, we have this triple conception of violence as being something that is happening somewhere else, something that is being perpetrated by someone else, and as something that is something else altogether, which has nothing to do with knowledge and knowledge production. And the term of epistemic violence puts this image upside down and shows that knowledge on the one hand and violence on the other hand have a lot to do with each other. So when I speak of epistemic violence, I want to contribute to this debate that is already going on for decades, in fact, but which is not really centered in IR proper yet. Despite many, many people who already do this kind of work, there is little debate about what epistemic violence exactly is or how we can conceive of it.
So can you talk a little bit about the larger project that this piece is a part of and how you got to writing this particular piece?
More than 10 years ago, I wrote my PhD dissertation. It was in German, and it was, if I translate it correctly, about suicide bombing as an object of knowledge, a boundary object within terrorism research. Because I realized that when scholars think and write about suicide bombing, they do a lot of things, but not really theorize or analyze it in a way that I would have thought they would. So I analyzed 20 years of research literature, and I came across epistemic violence as a term coined by Gayatri Spivak, and I came across Occidentalism by Fernando Coronil, and I thought these two terms would really help me to understand what is going on in this Western mainstream knowledge production about the absolute other of knowledge and the absolute other of reason and the absolute other of political legitimacy of violence, which is suicide bombing. So it's like the absolute other of anything that IR conceives of itself, or that terrorism studies conceive of themselves. So I thought that epistemic violence would be the best concept to understand what this knowledge production does, with all the rationalization and irrationalization, sexualization, culturalization, historicization that is going on when conceiving of this absolute lethal violence, which is illegitimate. And in the end, after this PhD, which has come out as a book also in German, I thought that I had used the term of epistemic violence in a very productive way. It helped me to analyze the material, but I had no complete or no comprehensive understanding of what epistemic violence was in the first place. So I used Spivak's term, as many, many scholars do. It's about othering in the first place. And I thought there should be more about epistemic violence. I want to collect more traditions of thought that tell us about epistemic violence. And this is when I started to think about a future project, a postdoc project on theorizing epistemic violence, as I called it. And I was lucky and privileged to have almost 5 years funding by the Austrian Science Fund. And so I did what in Austria and Germany is still very common, to write a habilitation. It means another ritual of getting into a discipline after your PhD in order to become a professor. So this was my habilitation project, and I tried to bring together debates about epistemic violence on the one hand, and already existing debates about structural, cultural, symbolic, and normative violence on the other. So as I said before, I wanted to combine these deep critical epistemologies that come from postcolonial and decolonial and feminist traditions of thought on the one hand, and on the other hand, broad concepts of violence that tell us a lot about entanglements of violence and knowledge, but that do not use the term of epistemic or epistemology, and that are better known in our disciplines, but marginalized themselves. So the overall project, or the aim after my PhD work, was to contribute to a debate that makes more use of wide concepts of violence, especially of epistemic violence.
So you spoke about this a little bit already, but why do you think there's a need to clarify the concept of epistemic violence for IR scholars?
I think to those who do not use the term at all, it is easier or more convincing to see a couple of traditions of thought who use the term epistemic violence instead of one citation only, which is mostly Spivak across the decades. So I want the mainstream to acknowledge and to recognize we have a problem with entanglements of knowledge and violence, and we as a discipline are part of the problem and not only there to solve it, as we often claim it in these disciplines. So this is to explain and to introduce and to elaborate on what epistemic violence is, what we can understand by it, and why it is important to do so. On the other hand, and reviewers and readers and critics have rightly said so, critical voices have known what epistemic violence is for decades, and they used the term already, referring back to Spivak in more than 90% of the cases. And to those, I wanted to offer these entanglements with other broad concepts of violence. And I wanted to, in some way, strengthen their own work with my contribution, because I think many critical voices, critical scholars use the term, but they do not offer the reader very much to understand it in a more detailed way. Maybe with one or two citations, they put it, but then they go on towards something else. So there are many, many analyses and books being written and articles being written that start from epistemic violence in the first place, as if everybody would already understand it. And I thought it might be useful to offer a few pathways towards understanding the problem at stake. Many scholars who already use the term very clearly do this in the post and decolonial context of and traditions of thought for very good reasons. And in the book that my article is like an outcome from, in the German book, I elaborate very broadly about the concept of the coloniality, colonial modernity, or coloniality of power, knowledge, and being, which in critical IR context in the English-speaking world is already very well known. But we must not forget that other areas of discourse, other cultural areas of debate, like the German academic context, is not the very same. Of course, English is being written and read over here, But for instance, the concept of colonial modernity has not been so self-evident during the last decade as it has been in the English context. So back to the article, I also explain to those who have not met it yet, or maybe repeat it for others, what this concept of coloniality is. And I argue very strongly, along with many, many other scholars, I did not invent that, that if we use epistemic violence as a concept, we should use it together with the concept of coloniality. We should not take epistemic violence for anything and everything that has to do with knowledge and violence, but we should never forget that context is 500 years of colonial expansion and the ongoing coloniality and the deep entanglements between systems of power and systems of violence in the world on the one hand and systems of knowledge production on the other. So again, for those who are already familiar with it, it might be boring in the first place, but I try to offer more than Spivak only. And to those who have not met the term yet, it may be an invitation to think about it in that way specifically.
Fantastic. So lastly, what do you see as the next steps in undoing epistemic violence in IR?
This is, of course, the most difficult question. Let me start with an anecdote that maybe illustrates one of the problems. English is not my first, neither my working language. And I wrote this article in English, and I had support by colleagues who proofread and by the editorial team, etc., and by reviewers who made good remarks. And in the end, I really had to compose the piece to make it compatible with this English publication system. And very much of the publication process today is fully automatized, relies upon algorithms that tell you when to do which kind of corrections, that the systems do not really work at all times of the process, which you as a member of the editorial team might know very well. And the central argument of my text is to take epistemic violence into account, a concept that especially comes from or was coined by an Indian scholar. And I introduce another, it's not only Spivak, I also refer to Shiva. So it comes from this post-colonial context, and it has done these decades of traveling around the world as a concept. And in the end of the production process of my own piece, I get an email, an anonymized email by Springer Nature, which asks me to do the corrections and the proofs. And the mailing address is in India. And an Indian colleague, whom I presume to be in a precarious working condition, first no name, then of course the person also had a name and I could correspond with him or her. I don't know if it was a man or a woman. Well, there was somebody sitting in India working on my text about epistemic violence. And I think it illustrated so very well parts of the problem. But at this time of the production process, I couldn't articulate it anymore. And Galtung has said, and Galtung, a scholar from peace studies, whom I also cite with the structural violence and cultural violence, he wrote it in an article as early as, I think it was 1971, about the division of labor within the academia, who does the theory work and who does all the research in the third world and who does the work that is not paid at all or very badly paid and who gets the credits. So in the end, the circle was closed again with somebody in India sitting and with English that is much more better than my own, much better than my own, making corrections for that article. So that was a very long story to say, I think in the production process and in the domain of publications, we really have a problem that we cannot solve as individuals. In the end, we have about 5 multinational corporations who own the knowledge of the world and who finally decide about whose knowledge is published in what form. So there's a big problem that we cannot solve on an individual level as scholars. I think we can do in associations and in working groups of associations, and I really want to explicitly thank the colonial, post-colonial, decolonial group of BISA, British International Studies Association. I met a couple of their members, I think about 7 years ago, when I attended the conference of BISA, and I was amazed by the work that they are doing. So these are the people and many others around the world who try to change the terms of conversation, not only in decolonizing the canon and rearranging our teaching, but also finding other forms of how to perform at a conference. But when it comes to publications, it's really a hard business. And I think we have to think a lot harder and a lot more how we can change the working conditions and the modes of publication there. So there are many scholars like your editorial team as well, who try to bring in multiple voices, bring in other people into the mainstream, or into these publication possibilities, which is important. And I'm thankful for all the efforts that you've put into it. But I really don't know quite well how we should change that. I think these corporations of knowledge production should be organized in a different way, in a non-privatized way, in a way that distributes the profits in a different manner. Another thing is, of course, policies of human resources inside the IR Academy. So trying to think about who will get the next job in order to change things in terms of epistemic injustice, epistemic oppression, and so on. I think a big field where we can do a lot is teaching, in our own teaching, to try to find different modes and pedagogies to transmit knowledge in a different way, include knowledge in a different way, make it more participative and multiply the voices. Yeah, but in the end, as Rolando Vasquez rightly says, we all move and we all operate on modernity's epistemic authority, a term that I like very much of him. So we cannot put ourselves completely outside these modes of production, but we have to try to change them from the inside. And this is, of course, a collaborative process and not an individual process. So many people ask me this question when I talk about epistemic violence, but how can I do it differently? So everybody tries to find a way of not being guilty, not participating in it. And I always say, well, of course, we all participate in a way, in one way or another, to a lesser or to a bigger extent. And I think we have to start to think about it first and acknowledge that we operate on this epistemic territory and then try to reorganize it. International conferences are another issue. So I'm living and working in Austria and also working in Germany. And when we have associations of disciplinary fields, conferences often take place in public universities. So this is what I was used to when I started to attend conferences. And I was completely shocked when I went to BISA conferences, or then I went to ISA once in Toronto. They are all organized in a completely privatized form, like in big hotels, and you pay a lot of fees in order to enter these conferences. And it's a whole business of organizing conferences and paying for it. And I think this is completely weird when we talk about epistemic violence and knowledge production. And I would hope that we find other forms in the future in the academia to make these conferences more accessible, more public in the future. So that is one point. And in my article, I also cite a colleague, I think he's Swiss and based in the Netherlands, Xavier Guillaume, who speaks of an economy of epistemic violence and IR. And I think this is a big part of it, the economy that is behind it. It's not only about finding the right theory and using the right term and being on the right side when it comes to citing the right people, but it's also about the whole organization of the domain of knowledge production in the academia and beyond.
Great. Thank you so much.